Diabetes Insights, Breakthroughs and Innovators. The EASD TV podcast from the annual meeting of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes.
Hello again. Now, viruses have long been implicated as a trigger of type 1 diabetes, but it's a messy story. And although enteroviruses have been fingered, there are many other viruses too that have at one time or another been in the frame as a potential trigger for type 1. To take us further into the story of infection and type 1, can I introduce three people who were in a very well-attended session. Knut Dahl Jorgensen from Denmark.
From Oslo, Norway.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes. Knut Dahl Jorgensen from Oslo in Norway. How could I have done that to you? Then we have Heikki Hoiti, who is our virologist from Finland, and Desia Izirik from many places, but I think currently Belgium, but via Brazil.
Yes.
So who wants to start on this? Perhaps as the diabetologist amongst our group here, we'll start with you, Knut. What have been the theories so far, and where are we in this constantly evolving story?
First of all, I would like to say it's very important that we follow this track of defining if the virus is triggering type 1 diabetes, because it may lead to another strategy for prevention. As we will talk about here also, it is, and that would perhaps be a cheap and simple path for preventing type 1 diabetes. So therefore, it's important to follow this track. It has been difficult to find the viruses, but with new techniques, as virus perhaps will tell us, it is possible now to detect very small amounts of viruses in the tissues. And in Oslo, we performed a trial where we collected pancreatic tissue in live, newly diagnosed adult type 1 diabetes patients, and we detected the enteroviruses in all cases and in only 10% of controls. So that was a strong argument for the virus to be important. Then we performed a phase 2 randomized trial using antivirals against the enteroviruses. And we could detect an important effect that it could in some way preserve the insulin production. So the case that we could find the virus and that we could find an effect of antiviral treatment, I think these are really strong arguments for that viruses can trigger the disease.
Okay, let's go to our virologist. There are lots of viruses, incredibly common in childhood. I mean, to be a child is to be infected with viruses. And just because you find virus doesn't necessarily mean it's the cause. So where are we on that part of the detective story?
Yes, this is a very important question. So the I think the last 10 years have been very important in this kind of questions, and that means that new technologies have came in. So now we can screen all the possible viruses from human beings by sequencing, let's say, stool samples with the modern sequencing technologies. So it means that we can find all viruses from the sample. And what we have been, for example, doing in our studies is following children from birth. And then when you follow thousands or 10,000s of children, many of them develop diabetes during the follow-up. And then we can go back to the samples we have collected during the follow-up. And using these modern technologies, we can detect all human viruses from the children. And for example, the large TEDi study, which did this kind of very thorough examination, found that the enteroviruses were the main candidate among all other viruses. There was also an other virus group, adenoviruses, which gave a signal, but that's it. So there were no other viruses.
Am I right in thinking that enteroviruses, there are lots of enteroviruses?
Yes, that's also true. And then you have to asked the question that among all these more than 100 enterovirus types, are there some viruses which are important in diabetes? And that has been also addressed by the sequencing studies and antibody studies. And the answer seems to be that there's a subgroup of enteroviruses, which is called Coxsackie B viruses, which really want to infect the insulin-producing beta cells.
And so they particularly like the pancreas?
Yes, they like pancreas. They want to go there. And that's there's a mechanism which is called receptor binding. So the virus always needs to bind a receptor on the cell surface to be able to infect the cells. And the beta cells really express strongly these receptors, which Coxsackie B group virus use. And also in these big cohort studies like TELIS study and Finnish DIP study, the Coxsackie B group has been the one among all enterovirus types which showed the association with diabetes. So that's, and for example, here today we report our still unpublished findings that when you sequence the virus from the pancreas tissues, what, for example, Knut has collected, also those viruses seem to be these Coxsackie B group viruses, which you find in the pancreas of diabetic patients.
So, Dasio, there aren't, as far as I know, although there may be some in production, any vaccines against Coxsackie B virus. Is that the way forward?
I believe so, but this is something that Hoyti is developing. So perhaps you can explain how are you pursuing it?
Yeah, maybe I could take this question, but there's a vaccine under development now. So it has been in the phase one trial, and it's targeting these Coxsackie B viruses, which are have linked to diabetes, and we know that it works in principle, so it's immunogenic and safe, according to the first human trial. And now it's progressing to the next steps, and we hope that that vaccine is needed to find out whether these viruses really can cause diabetes, because if we vaccinate part of the in a randomized trial, part of the individuals, and then the others get placebo, and we can maybe see. I hope so, that the incidence of diabetes is lower in the vaccinated group. And that's what we aim at. So we aim at prevention with the vaccine.
So do you see it as a universal vaccine as part of the childhood schedules, or do you see it as perhaps at the beginning offering it to the siblings of families who are affected by type 1? Although, of course, that would only pick up 10% of the...
Yes. If we can show that the virus prevent diabetes, I think then probably first it's going to be used in the risk groups, like family members of diabetics, or then if you do genetic screening, for example, at birth.
So polygenic risk scoring or something
for
like
example.
That.
But I think that, for example, countries where you have a high incidence of diabetes, like Finland has the highest incidence in the world.
Are you just full of Coxsackie B viruses? They're all over the place.
No, it's the genes. It's a genetic
It's the genetic susceptibility plus the virus.
I think nobody knows, but I think that's the answer. It's both. And it's a very long story to explain how I think that my bias is that the protection against these viruses is lower in the Finnish children, because the maternal antibodies which mother gives to the babies, newborn babies, they are at lower levels than in most other countries. So the Finnish newborns are not very well protected against these viruses. And that's what we have found in our epidemiological studies.
So the scientists in all of us keeps on saying, why?
One thing that is interesting, and this is the angle that we are taking, is that when the virus infects the islets, the beta cells evolve to an autoimmune response and are killed, and the alpha cells that are neighbor cells, they survive. So even in long-term type 1, the alpha cells are there. So the questions we are trying to answer is why the alpha cells are in a way immune to the virus, while the beta cells eventually die. So we have been comparing their gene expression, and we went a step further. We asked which other species are completely or very much resistant to virus. And we focus on bats, because bats can have rabies and other virus, and they don't develop any symptoms. So we compared the global gene expression in bats against beta and alpha cells. And alpha cells are closer to bats, and we identified one gene that is probably responsible, at least in part, for the alpha cell protection. So the idea is to learn from alpha cells and bats how to protect the beta cells.
So could you develop something with an mRNA vaccine?
Yes, that's...
So do you have a colony of bats in Belgium?
No, what is happening today, you don't need it. We collaborate with people in Israel that they have colonies of bats. But what happened today is that people sequence all genes that bat different tissues express under baseline or following a viral infection, and this data is deposited online. So we just reanalyze the data with our own bioinformatic tools, and we compare with alpha and beta cells. So as long as you have collaborators who have colonies of bats, you don't need to have the bats at your garden.
It's a really fascinating story, but there have been so many twists and turns in this particular saga, haven't there?
I think if you look at all of us, look at our white hair, you get an idea how long it's taken.
It must be 50 years since people said there's
yes,
a link.
There was a case that got a lot of attention in 1971. It was published. That a young child died of ketoacidosis in newly diagnosed type 1 diabetes. By autopsy, they could find the virus in the pancreas. And that virus was inoculated in mice who got diabetes. So that case was a sort of a starter of it in 79. I started this 20 years ago. And then it was because it was possible then to take pancreatic biopsies. There were techniques for that, surgical techniques for that. So that combined with the possibility with the sensitive assays coming up for virus detection, then we could start these studies.
Yes, I mean, shotgun sequencing is the thing that's made it possible, isn't it, really?
And maybe also, I would say there is, as we talked about, a genetic vulnerability for people to have this persistence of viruses. Usually, they clear it. Most people do it. But some vulnerable people do not. And then the virus site in the pancreas and make functional problems and then induce the autoimmunity that kills the cells.
So it's not just infection, but it's persistent infection.
That's right.
And I think that's very important. Issue.
There are also other examples. In multiple sclerosis, they have found in epidemiological studies a connection between Epstein-Barr virus, who will give mononucleosis, and the appearance of multiple sclerosis. And we know that the Epstein-Barr virus, they make persistent infections. So I think that's in parallel. It's a very interesting thing. We have also detected this virus in the thyroid of autoimmune thyroid disease. So it may be sort of a general principle of disease in autoimmunity that viruses are important for triggering this.
I could perhaps add that I think the current state of art is that I think most people acknowledge that there's an association between enteroviruses and type 1 diabetes. And it has came from the big studies, big clinical studies, prospective studies, as I mentioned, the follow-up from birth. And those studies have been prospective. So it means that they have much better power to find these associations than the previous studies in the 1970s, where the first findings came out. Then the other important new angle or evidences that people have in large international consortia found these viruses from the pancreas tissue of diabetics more frequently than in controls using RNA technologies, protein technologies, targeted and non-targeted, and that's very important. And then I think the third, important advantage is what you are doing is the cell models and trying to understand the mechanisms that why beta cells are susceptible for the virus. And all these together, I think, has sort of opened now a new era where this really seems to go forward. And that's why I think the trials with the antiviral drugs and with the vaccine are very important, because they are needed to prove the causality, which is always difficult in medical
science. Yes, you need to develop the vaccine, because if you give the vaccine and then you don't have the diabetes, then you know that actually it really was the Coxsackie B that caused it.
Very strong argument for causal relations.
And in your view, let's say it's perhaps too early, but in your estimation, which percentage of the cases would be viral related?
Yeah, that's also an important question. And we have estimated this with the calculations, and we ended up to about half of T1D could be linked to the enteroviruses. But it's, of course, really artificial calculation. So I think we need the vaccine trials to really know what proposal.
And then, of course, if you had the vaccines and then some of the people that you then discovered did have enterovirus but didn't respond to the vaccine, is it because the vaccine wasn't working or because their T1D was caused by something else?
Well, I think it's something else, because it's I don't...
Just, when you've got a virologist, you just need to pin them to the ground, don't you?
As I said, we found an effect of antiviral treatment in newly diagnosed type 1 diabetes, that it could in some extent preserve the endogenous insulin production, which is a good thing. And if we take this further and we would like to do that, a new trial, in those who have just the first stage with the appearance of one autoantibody. And if we give the antivirals at that point, maybe we can have an endpoint to say if the antibodies disappear and the child is healthy.
So that
would be a very good trial to do, because then we could be quite sure that it was the antiviral effect.
And then that takes us back, I mean, not that this was the subject of your session, but we've had lots of other big sessions here at ESD this year about big screening programs. Because unless you have screening programs to pick up people who are at high risk, it would be difficult, and you'd have to do a universal vaccine schedule, and that would also be difficult. So all these things are interlinked.
That's right.
Yes, I think so. We are living this transition from research to novel therapies and intervention. One thing to keep in mind, this estimation of 50%, is that beta cells and the immune system, they have ways to sense the viral infection. We call it danger signals. So they have receptors for danger signals. And probably the most common are virus, Coxsackie virus. But there are other danger signals, like even fragments of DNA and RNA. So it seems that if the person has the genetic susceptibility and these receptors for danger signals, which we all have, they will overreact when they are confronted with a virus or with other danger signals.
It's a fascinating area. There's so much still to learn. And it's one of those classic areas of science where you close one door and then 149 other doors open in front of you for different investigations. Thank you so much for coming in. It's been a pleasure. And of course, if you want to see that session, which sounds absolutely fascinating, then of course it is available online through the EASD website.
Thank you for joining us on the podcast of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes. We hope you enjoyed today's insights. If you did, Go ahead and hit subscribe and you'll always stay up to date with the latest in diabetes research and discoveries. And if you'd like to dive deeper, you can find plenty more information at easd.org.